What is this strange relationship between political dynasties and democracies? So dynasties and democracies in many countries sort of go together. We've seen a lot of that in our neighborhood. We see next door to us in Sri Lanka, one dynasty right now is on the run. That is the Rajapaksa dynasty. On the other side of our border, on the western side, we see two dynasties getting together. That is the Bhutto dynasty and the Nawaz Sharif dynasty. That's a first generation dynasty, both coming together to share power. They used to be rivals. So what is that phenomenon called? Now, I've now discovered today the definition of that phenomenon. I wish I had coined it, but I haven't. A professor of political science in the Philippines, and I will give you the details, he has coined it, and he has coined it in the context of the Philippines. And that is where Cut the Clutter is taking us today, to the distant archipelago of the Philippines. It's called the Philippines or Republic of Philippines. It's sort of the gateway to Indo-Pacific either way. So you go from Indian Ocean towards Pacific Ocean, in this case North Pacific, or you come in from Pacific towards Indian Ocean. It's a country with South China Sea to its west and the Pacific Ocean to its east. Now, the reason it made me think immediately of the Pakistan situation as well, and also a peculiar feature to dynastic politics is what's happening in the Philippines. The Philippines elections, presidential elections have just taken place. Final results are not out yet. Maybe they are out by the time you see it, but the trend is very clear right now. We know that Ferdinand Marcos Jr., that is the son of old Ferdinand Marcos, the dictator of 21 years, he is getting elected as president. And we know all the stories about what kind of kleptocracy the Marcoses ran. We know about Imelda Marcoses, that is, the new president elects moms, mothers, 3,000 pairs of shoes. We also know that in the Guinness Book of World Records, the Marcoses, that is the parent Marcoses, are listed as the biggest thieves of a country's treasures. Father and the mother were both exiled. The father died in Hawaii. The mother came back a few years later, and son began to rebuild the politics. Now he's getting re-elected. The important thing is that as he's getting re-elected, it looks like that the outgoing president, that is President Rodrigo Duterte, he and Junior Marcos are in cahoots. In fact, it's quite evident that they are working together. Under the Filipino system, a president is limited to a six-year term. So Duterte, who was going out after finishing his six-year term, he even said, I'll contest for vice president, right? I'll contest for the Senate, because he wanted to be in office somehow. He faces a lot of serious criminal cases. He also faces many cases in international courts because of the sort of encounter approach he has followed to his war on drugs. His bands or his paramilitaries have killed lots and lots and lots of people on the mere suspicion of being drug smugglers or drug dealers. So maybe if you don't like somebody, just call them a drug dealer and be done with them. So now what's happened is that his daughter, and there's a colorful story there that I will tell you. Another reason I go to the Philippines today, it's because I discovered that the Philippines' politics is perhaps even more colorful than ours or that of any of our neighbors. Now, his daughter contested for vice president. And now it seems she's going to win that election for vice president. And the new president, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., backs her. And from all the statements that are coming out, Duterte also seems to back Ferdinand Marcos. So it looks like two dynasties have come together. To that extent, it is not very different from what's happened in Pakistan. Two dynasties have come together to share power. Now, what do you call this phenomenon? And for that, I have to thank the New York Times. There's a story in the New York Times which I'm sharing with you. They've quoted Professor Aries Aruge, professor of political science at University of the Philippines at Diliman, who has said that what you've seen is a cartel of dynasties. The two dynasties have cartelized. Now, that I think is a very Very interesting definition. And you know, I so wish that I had thought of it, but you know, we are journalists. We take wisdom, we even take smart lines from where we get them, as long as we credit them. So thank you, Professor Aruge. This is a wonderful line, and I promise to use it again and again, because that is exactly what we've seen in Pakistan. And that is just the kind of thing we might at some stage end up seeing in Sri Lanka as well. Unlikely it will happen in Bangladesh between the Khalida Zia dynasty, the Zia Rahman dynasty, and also the Sheikh Hasina or Mujib dynasty. But you never know. Whenever you have rival dynasties, it's always possible, and now we have examples, it's always possible that they can come together. So one very close to our western borders, and one at the farthest sort of end of our region of Southeast Asia. South Asia, we are in South Asia and Southeast Asia. The Philippines is sort of the outer limit of Southeast Asia. Then you have Northeast Asia with Japan, Korea, etc., etc. Now, first of all, who's getting elected? I promised you that Philippines politics is much more fun, much more interesting than even ours or Pakistan's or Sri Lanka's or Bangladesh's. Now, this is Ferdinand Marcos Jr. After 36 years, Marcos is getting back power. In 1986, Ferdinand Marcos had lost power. He had gone down facing a great deal of opprobrium. His fate wasn't very different. In fact, if anything, was much worse than what the Rajapaksas are facing right now. So he and his wife had also gone into exile, and reams of stories and articles were written about them and their loot and their brutal methods. He had been the dictator using martial law until 1981. He had been a dictator from 1965 to 1986 for 21 years, of which the years up to 1981 were under martial law. Completely brutal dictator. And he said, this is not a dictatorship, this is a constitutional autocracy. So he was one of the longest lasting dictators. 36 years later, his son has come back, and by the way, he's getting a victory margin which is the highest since the woman who came to power after the senior Marcos were ousted and after the senior Marcos's people had assassinated her husband, that is Benigno Aquino. Since then, since Corazon Aquino won in 1986, this is the highest margin for somebody in a presidential election. Now, he's won this, and he's a colorful character himself. His mom is around. She's come back. She's 92. She, meanwhile, has contested for the presidency twice and lost. Never mind. Now, her son is becoming a president. Now, how has Junior Marcos built his politics? So, once again, Filipino politicians mostly tend to be sort of fun characters. He's built his fame with young people through a game show, through a bunch of game shows that he hosts and posts on YouTube, exactly where you're watching this, Cut the Clutter. And in this, the most popular version of these shows, he plays a cool, loving parent, right, with his children, etc., etc. And young people in the Philippines love it. In fact, if you've seen the surveys pre-elections and even during elections, surveys tell you that among the young people in the Philippines, that's between, say, 18 to 25, 70%, 7-0, 7 out of 10 young people seem to prefer him to others. That is why he's winning. A cool parent. Who had ever thought that cool parents win elections in democracies? But he's winning. And particularly in his case, he's a cool parent when his own parents weren't that cool. You know, if somebody's been dictator for 21 years and has the Guinness Book of World Records for carrying out the biggest theft from a country, then that wasn't a cool parent. But a non-cool parent's son has sold himself, projected himself as a cool parent. And also, this is an election campaign in which a lot of lies have floated on social media in the Philippines. I will also share a story from international press, I think from the New York Times, on this as well. So you get an idea of what can happen in a digitized political environment. Now, he comes to power. His mother already is facing an 11-year jail sentence. She had been convicted. She has an 11-year sentence. And the family also owes the state about $4 billion. That's almost 30,000 crore rupees in estate taxes, because that is the money they are supposed to have taken out. Of course, Junior Marco says this is fake news. And of course, now that he's the president, he has the opportunity to forgive his mom. See, son, forgiving his mom is easy. And also maybe to wave off these taxes, which he calls fake news anyway. But importantly, the deal between him and Duterte also indicates that he will now give a reprieve to Duterte as well. So Duterte, who faces so many cases in the Philippines and in international courts, he's now counting on Junior Marcos to bail him out also. And Junior Marcos has let it be known quite obviously and quite evidently and quite vocally that he will let him go, that he'll find a way so that Duterte's sins do not catch up with him, and then to make sure Duterte's daughter is there. So Duterte can't be president, but he's got his best buddy, in this case, best buddy because of the shared common interest, right, as the president, and his daughter as the vice president. Once again, because I keep saying this politics is more fun than ours, you have to see what's been happening. Now, Duterte himself is a doubly colorful character. In fact, very often, and you've heard this from me before, I keep saying that if you go around the world, it's all ruled by strong men of the nationalist right. And I always say, see, I've been saying this since the times of Trump. See, Trump, Putin, Xi Jinping, Narendra Modi, Erdogan, Bolsonaro, Orban, and when you get bored, Rodrigo Duterte. Now, Duterte is going out, but Duterte has been very colorful. Now, Duterte is somebody, a lot of Filipino politicians are famous for making infamous comments, for making very controversial comments. So there was a case, for example, of an Australian missionary woman being raped and killed. So Duterte's response was that he should have raped her instead. In fact, even when he saw the body, he said something like, he should have gone first. Now his daughter attacked him for that, Sara Duterte, and she said this is a terrible statement, and she said that she speaks also as a rape victim herself. In response, Duterte himself said that his daughter was nothing but a drama queen. Now, the same daughter this time said she will contest for vice president. Duterte wanted, first of all, his own henchman to contest for president. That did not happen. Then he wanted his nickname is Go Bong, and I will tell you, everybody in the Philippines has nicknames. So he wanted his henchman to contest as vice president. Then his daughter filed her nomination. Then he opposed that. He said he expressed great disapproval of his daughter. Then he said he will contest against the daughter, but that didn't happen. Finally, he says, come daughter, come home. All is forgiven. So while one is going to be forgiving his 92-year-old mom, the other is forgiving his daughter, who's now the new vice president, which is the reason we called it a cartel of dynasties. Now, as we mentioned to you, in the Philippines, looks like everybody has a nickname. You can say that about a lot of us in India as well. Bengalis love nicknames, Punjabis love nicknames, I'm sure other parts of the country also. But the Philippines, public leaders also are more known by their nicknames, so much so that the famous Filipino leader and democracy activist, somebody who was a thorn in Marcos's side, Benigno Aquino, he was called Ninoy. That was his nickname. After he was assassinated at the Manila International Airport, where he returned from exile, despite warnings from people that he faced assassination, and he was assassinated at the airport on arrival. That airport is named after him, and it's not called Benigno Aquino Airport. It's called Ninoy Airport. So nicknames are very popular. So just look at the nicknames. Let me run through the list of the nicknames of prominent Filipino leaders. Ferdinand Marcos Sr. was called McCoy. I don't know whether it meant he was a real McCoy. Does it come from that metaphor? I don't know. Or he was also called Andy. Remember, the Philippines is the closest the Americans have had to a colony, because since 1565, the Philippines was a Spanish colony. In 1898, the Spanish turned it over to the Americans, and the Americans then ruled it from 1898 to 1935, and then it became independent. So there is a lot of American culture in the Philippines, a lot of Spanish culture and a lot of American culture. So Ferdinand Marcos was called McCoy or Andy. Ferdinand Marcos Jr., who is now going to become president, he's called Bongbong. In fact, if you want to know more about him, just Google Bongbong. Benigno Aquino, I mentioned to you, was called Ninoy. Corazon Aquino, his widow, who became president after ousting the Marcoses, she was called Cori or Tita Cori. Then her son, that is Benigno Aquino's son, so that's the third dynasty in the Philippines. Then Benigno Aquino III, that is a junior Aquino, he became president for a full term. His nickname was Pinoy. So Ninoy, Pinoy. Right? Then Rodrigo Duterte, who's called Digong or Rodi. Then Sara Duterte, the new vice president, his daughter, she's called Inde Sara. Raymond Magsaysay, the same Magsaysay after whom the award is named, he was president in the mid-50s. He died in an air crash midway through his presidency. He was called Monching. So everybody has a nickname. Now, in the middle of all these, if you want to see how colorful Filipino politics is, we also had a character called Joseph Estrada, nickname Erap or Era. Now, Joseph Estrada was also known more for his funny statements or controversial statements. He had been a film star earlier, not exactly a comedian, but almost there. Now, his English was so funny that for a long time he was made fun of for having bad English. For example, in an interview, somebody asked him, is it true that when you were a young man, when you were a teenager, you were asthmatic? And his answer was, no, I've always been a Catholic, right? Or there was one speech of his or one interview where he said, listen, if you laugh at my English, I will start speaking in binocular. What he meant was vernacular. So after that, a lot of jokes spread about him also. He decided to turn those jokes into an advantage for himself. So going up into his election campaign, he had a book published titled Eruptions, because Erap was his nickname, Eruptions, how to speak English without trial. So that was making fun of his bad English. But his most remembered statement is something that he said about Bill Clinton. He said, President Clinton and I share sex scandals. He gets all the scandal, I get all the sex. It's a public statement that he made, and the fact is that in his life, it looks like he got plenty of sex because he acknowledged 11 children out of wedlock, or children who in conventional terms would be called illegitimate children. So he acknowledged them and then fought over the 12th and did not allow a DNA test. And the young woman, Josephine Rose, who claimed that the female child or the daughter that she delivered was Estrada's, he refused to acknowledge her. And he said, look, if she's my daughter, I won't be surprised, because every woman wants to produce a child from me. So once again, if you hear all this, if you read all this, tell me which country's politics is more fun. Of course, we can laugh at all these follies and foibles about Filipino politicians, but we also know that it's been a very, very violent politics, history of very violent politics, and the country, despite many resources, has remained quite poor. It has per capita incomes which are, if anything, slightly lower than Sri Lanka's. Also, I know that you will ask me, so why should we Indians bother so much about the Philippines? One, because it's an interesting story. And second, at the other end, sitting at the gateway of Indo-Pacific, it's another country which is worried about the Chinese, about Chinese maritime claims, and it has ordered a large bunch, almost $375 million worth of BrahMos missiles from India.